Greetings, listeners. This is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old-Timers Club of Australia, with this month's news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club for August 2024. I am Andrew, a VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. Details on when to hear the news and information bulletins are available at the club's website, www.raotc.org.au. VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, along with 2-metre repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you missed the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. Just put RAOTC into your favourite search engine. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email? Our address is raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's news broadcast. Welcome to the August 2024 edition of RAOTC Club News. Last time I spoke in June, I discussed the September luncheon and hybrid AGM, which will be held on September 19 at the Caulfield RSL here in Melbourne. The guest speaker for the luncheon will be Mick Ampt, a VK3 Charlie Hotel, who will present a talk about his journey getting into operating SSB voice on the microwave bands from 23 centimetres through to 10 gigahertz or 3 centimetres. Mick will have a complete portable microwave station set up for inspection and discussion, as well as a video of some of the Melbourne Microwave Group's microwave exploits. The display will be a static display only. Please note, this luncheon is a full week before the AFL Grand Final, which hopefully won't clash with any other events on members' social calendars. Also please note, this is 1 week earlier than in previous years. Bookings and payment must be made either to the RATC PO Box or via email and must be received by Wednesday, September 11. Further details on how to pay by several different methods are available on the RATC website. This event will be closed to the general public. However, there are several ways that members can attend. If you can attend in person, then details will be available shortly on the RATC website, along with a flyer that will accompany your September edition of Old Timers News, the club's twice-yearly journal. The cost of the luncheon will be $36 for an excellent two-course meal. Tea and coffee will be provided. Hopefully, we have sorted out the mix-up with the tea and coffee that was experienced at the March luncheon. Soft drink, wine and spirits can be purchased from the bar. Members are also invited to bring along guests. Members who are unable to attend in person are still welcome. Whilst we're unable to provide a meal or Uber Eats, you can attend via teleconferencing, which if you've never used it before is really quite easy to use. There are quite a few programs available. Skype is probably the oldest program around. The RAOTC use Zoom, which works on pretty much whatever electronic device you may own, a Windows PC, an Apple Mac, or a Linux computer. It also works on Apple's iPhone and also smartphones that use the Android operating system. The way it works is quite simple. You send a request to attend the RAOTC AGM at our email address, which is raotc@raotc.org.au. You'll be provided a link to the meeting, along with the time and meeting number, as well as a passcode. Normally, it's as easy as clicking on the link. If Zoom isn't installed on your device, after a few prompts, it will download the Zoom program for you, all free of charge. The convener of the meeting will be notified of your presence and allow you to attend and view the meeting. If you're using a desktop computer and don't own a microphone or a camera, you can still attend and view the meeting. We just won't be able to hear you or see you, but we'll know you're there. Stand by for more details in the September OTN. Help needed by the committee. The committee are also looking for a member or two to prepare and record broadcasts 5 times per year. A member to assist with the preparation of documents for the meetings, a member to assist with organising luncheons, someone to arrange guest speakers, and there are various other tasks. The committee holds meetings 4 times per year via Zoom, so members can live anywhere in Australia. We would appreciate more interstate members' help out. New articles for OTN. What sort of articles do you want to see in OTN? Most of us have done something productive in our working lives and hopefully have made a contribution to society. That is, we've all done something interesting. What may have appeared to have been humdrum to you, however, may well be of interest to many others. Over 30 years ago, I worked in a development section of a crystal manufacturer for a number of years. Unfortunately, in the economic downturn in 1990, development sections are generally the first to go in order to save costs. On my last day there, I whipped around and took a bunch of photos of different aspects of the plant and the people I had worked with. This included some of the equipment I helped develop during my time there. During the 3 years I was there, I did learn a few basic things about quartz crystals, and this inspired me to put an article together a few years ago of my time there. It was a good activity to keep me busy during some of the colder months here in Melbourne. Give it a thought as to what you've done over the years. Many others would be interested to hear your story. It doesn't necessarily have to be about radio and electronics, although that's always welcome. You may have been a civil engineer, for example. It's no good sitting back saying we should have more articles about this and less about that and so on. It's really up to you to consider what you can contribute to what is your club. For those listeners that aren't yet a member of RAATC but were wondering what the club is all about, I'd like to draw your attention to a sample of the club's 6 monthly magazine, Old Timers News, which is available on the club's website. OTN, as it's called, is chock-a-block full of interesting articles relating to historical aspects of our hobby and member stories, with a major emphasis on radio. However, often a wide range of other topics are covered. And generally, they are written by our members, drawing on their various life experiences. Available online is the September 2022 edition. In this edition, one of the subjects was a member who worked for Radio Australia in Shepparton. Another article covers the life and happenings of longtime AR magazine editor Bill Rice of VK3ABP. In the printed copy, which is mailed out, is also a comprehensive list of current members. If you haven't already done so, why not give it a look? New members. Today, I am pleased to welcome the following new members to the RAATC. Murray Southwell, a VK7 Zulu Mike Sierra, became full member number 1875 on the 8th of June 2024. And Andy Salmon, a VK3 X-ray Kilo Alpha, became full member number 1876, also on the 8th of June 2024. Silent Keys. It is with regret I report the following silent key. Peter Lloyd, VK3 Fox Papa Lima, who passed away on December 2023. Let us pause a moment in memory of our departed colleagues. Members are reminded the very latest club news is available via the RAATC website, www.raatc.org.au. Put RAATC into your favourite search engine to find it.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club, Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
This month, once again, we have a couple of interesting technical articles for you. First up is Clive, a VK6 CSW, who reads an article written by Herman Williamson, VK2IXV, entitled Wireless Telegraphy Distress Signals. This will be followed once again by Clive with a discussion on permanent magnets called A Strong Attraction. I hope you enjoy these articles. So now, let's pass the microphone over to Clive, VK6CSW.
Wireless Telegraphy Distress Signals by Herman Willemsen, VK2IXV. In my previous life as a wireless operator on Dutch merchant ships and on Marine Coast radio stations in Papua New Guinea and Australia, I've been on the receiving end of quite a few SOS calls from small and large ships at sea. When they came in, you just had to drop your routine and commercial traffic and give total priority to the incoming distress message. In the early 1900s, there were actually three wireless telegraphy distress signals in use. One, CQD, used by wireless operators employed by the British Marconi Company. Two, SOE, used by wireless operators employed by Telefunken Germany till 1906. And three, SOS, adopted as the international distress signal from 1906 onwards. How could that be? Well, land telegraphs had traditionally used CQ to identify messages to all stations along a telegraph line. The Marconi Company added the letter D for distress, and voila, CQD was born. CQD is believed to be the first distress signal adopted for wireless or radio use and became effective for Marconi ships' wireless operators from the 1st of February 1904. CQD means Attention All Stations, Distress, and in no way were the letters CQ chosen because it sounded like Seek You, and neither does CQD mean Come Quick, Danger, or Come Quick, Damn It. Although CQD was used worldwide by Marconi operators, it was never adopted on an international scale. In 1906, an international wireless congress was held in Berlin, Telefunken Germany, having used SOE as a distress signal for some time, wanted this to become the international distress signal, but its rival, the British Marconi Company, wanted to stay with CQD. The Congress members decided against CQD as, in Morse code, it was too complex to transmit and too tiring on the wrist. Although SOE was favoured for ease of transmission, the stumbling block was the E, one dot in Morse, which could easily be lost in poor atmospheric conditions or interference. Therefore, the E in SOE was replaced by the letter S, three dots, and in 1906, SOS, three dots, three dashes, three dots, became the official international radio telegraph distress signal. In reality, however, Marconi operators did not conform until after the 1912 Titanic disaster and kept on using CQD as their primary distress signal in association, if deemed necessary, with SOS. According to one writer, it was the RMS Republic that transmitted the first SOS signal when, on the 23rd of January 1909, en route from New York to Liverpool, she collided with the Italian liner Florida off the island of Nantucket. But was it SOS or CQD? My view is that, because the Republic had Marconi wireless operators on board, she most likely used CQD as the distress signal. I back this up with the fact that even when the Titanic struck an iceberg on the 15th of April 1912, Titanic's Marconi chief radio operator, Jack Phillips, initially sent the distress signal CQD, but was reminded by junior radio operator Harold Bride that the new distress code was SOS, upon which both CQD and SOS were used. My records indicate the following. 23rd of January 1909, first CQD wireless distress signal sent from the Republic, and 11th of August 1909, first SOS wireless distress signal sent from the Arapahoe. the Arapahoe, en route from New York to Jacksonville, was drifting with a broken shaft. The combination of the three letters, SOS, never had any significance other than being the radio telegraphy distress signal. It certainly did not represent Save Our Souls, as used in newspaper stories on the Titanic disaster. But it anchored the new distress signal, SOS, in the mind of the public, and after 1912, CQD just faded away and was never really used again. Radio, or wireless, was first used to save lives at sea in 1899. Since then, numerous technological advances have been made. In 1992, the Global Maritime Distress and Safety System, the GMDSS, was introduced, and when it became compulsory in 1999, the ship's wireless operators, or SPARCs, and Morse code were no longer required or used on seagoing vessels. Morse code is now only used by radio amateurs, and even their numbers seem to be dwindling. What a shame. Well, thanks, Herman. That was a very interesting article.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations.
A strong attraction. In our younger days, most of us would have played around with permanent magnets, mainly of the simple horseshoe and flat bar types. If you forgot to replace the keeper across the poles, the cheap magnetic iron horseshoe was likely to quickly lose much of its magnetism. Better quality magnets made of Alnico, an iron alloyed with aluminium, nickel and cobalt, were stronger and less liable to deteriorate over time. Alnico was invented in Japan around 1931, and until the introduction of rare earth magnets in the 1970s, was one of the strongest magnetic materials commonly available. Old-style permanent magnetic loudspeakers were mostly made of Alnico, but newer ones often use a magnetic ferrite ring, but change is coming. We're all familiar with just how much sound can be generated by tiny loudspeakers in mobile telephones and are warned that if the volume on personal devices is turned up too high, the earphones or ear canal sound reproducers may damage our hearing. The electric motors used in hybrid or electric motor cars have extremely high power to weight ratios. Wind turbines and aircraft generators have remarkable power outputs for surprisingly low weight. Your computer uses some small but powerful motors to operate the hard disk, CD, DVD drives and such like. What makes these and countless other electromechanical devices so efficient is the rare earth permanent magnet. To illustrate the magnetic power of a modern magnet, I devised a crude experiment. A disc-shaped rare earth magnet was liberated from an old VCR video head. It is 65 millimeters in diameter, about 2.5 millimeters thick, and weighs just 50 grams. Yet it can support a 6-kilogram bar of steel. This elementary experiment showed that the magnet was able to support 120 times its own weight. Top quality neodymium rare earth magnets can do around 10 times better. The intensity of their magnetism is incredible and potentially dangerous to handle. The small brushless Outrunner DC electric motor, which powers one of my model aircraft, a 2-meter wingspan Grob G109, uses 14 rotating neodymium magnets. An Outrunner is one where the case spins while the windings are stationary. This motor weighs 96 grams or 3.4 ounces, has an external diameter of only 40 millimeters, yet draws 400 watts at 12 volts, putting it in the half horsepower class. It can spin a 12-inch propeller at over 9,000 RPM. This talk is not intended as a treatise on magnets and magnetism, but simply to outline two of the rare earth magnetic materials now in common use, samarium and neodymium. Rare earth is something of a misnomer. Samarium and neodymium are actually about as abundant in the earth's crust as tin, copper, cobalt, nickel, or even lead. Deposits are found in many countries, but extraction is expensive and time-consuming. At the moment, most mining is done in China. Samarium, a moderately hard silvery metallic element, was discovered by a French chemist in 1879 and named after the mineral samarskite from which it was isolated. However, these days, most samarium is extracted not from samarskite, but mainly from two other mineral ores, monazite and bastnaesite. Neodymium is a soft silvery metallic element which tarnishes easily in air. It was discovered in 1885 by the Austrian chemist Karl Auer von Welsbach. It does not exist naturally in metallic form, but, like samarium, is extracted mainly from monazite and bastnaesite. China has the largest commercial supply of both samarium and neodymium, and currently controls some 97% of the world's supply, a stranglehold which tends to unsettle America and the West, who are prolific users of rare earth magnets. In 1966, two scientists at the U.S. Air Force Materials Laboratory created interest in rare earth permanent magnets when they discovered that an alloy of yttrium and cobalt yielded intense directional magnetic properties. By the 1970s, further development of rare earth permanent magnets had taken place, and by the 1980s, two types, samarium cobalt and neodymium iron boron, or NIB, were coming into use. Today, they are commonplace, with NIB being the strongest magnetic material commercially available, cheaper than samarium cobalt, and with the best grades of NIB, capable of magnetically supporting over 1,000 times their own weight. There are many grades of these magnets, each with different properties, but in general terms, neodymium is about 5 times stronger magnetically than samarium cobalt and 10 times stronger than the best Alnico permanent magnets. Rare earth magnets, like their ferrite counterparts, are extremely brittle, difficult to machine, and also vulnerable to corrosion. So they're usually molded to shape, then plated or coated to protect them from breaking and chipping. Nickel plating is widely used. Neodymium is particularly prone to rusting if exposed and is itself highly corrosive. Any surface in contact with it must be suitably coated. Epoxy resins or superglues are often used to hold these magnets in place. The high strength of these permanent magnets necessitates care in handling. If unrestrained, small ones in close proximity will easily fly together, and the impact may chip or shatter them. Larger magnets can exert enough force to pinch or even break fingers. The VCR magnet in my experiment caused a small blood blister when it snapped back into place in its metal holder, trapping the skin of my index finger on the rim. Neodymium magnets are cheap enough to be found in toys, and there is at least one recorded death where the child swallowed magnets which snapped together, causing fatal internal tissue damage. Unlike most other types, rare earth permanent magnets are hard to demagnetize either electrically, mechanically, or in the presence of other magnets. Heat is their enemy. In general terms, all permanent magnets become weaker as they're heated. If heated above their Curie temperature, they lose their magnetic polarity, effectively becoming useless. In ferromagnetic materials, the effect is reversible, but if rare earth magnets are taken above their Curie temperature, they are magnetically destroyed permanently. Pure samarium and neodymium have Curie temperatures of around room temperature, too low to make a practical magnet, so they must be alloyed with other metals. Some types of neodymium permanent magnets begin to lose magnetism as low as about 80 degrees centigrade and are destroyed above 150 degrees centigrade. Samarium cobalt magnets can generally withstand up to about 300 degrees centigrade before significant magnetic weakening occurs, and some special purpose mixes can withstand rather more. Care is needed not to overheat neodymium magnetic electric motors, such as are found in my model aircraft, for example. Samarium mixes are more expensive and less magnetically powerful than the neodymium ones, but have their specialized uses, particularly where high temperatures exist. Rare earth magnets have wide application. Their high power and low cost enables very compact, innovative designs in many fields. Apart from loudspeakers, earphones, microphones, computer hard drives, and many other electronically related uses, they can also be found in bicycle dynamos, self-powered flashlights, magnetic levitation trains, magnetic bearings, linear motors, electric and hybrid car motors, full-sized electric-powered aircraft, as well as models, in fact virtually anywhere where a permanent magnet is needed. If you get a chance to recover some of these magnets from an old computer or VCR motor, you'll be amazed at just how powerful they are. Listeners wishing to pursue this topic can find much information on the internet. A good starting place is www.mceproducts.com. I'll just spell it again, www.mceproducts.com, and when that comes up, click on the subheading Knowledge Base. Thank you, Clive.
You are listening to VK3OTN and associated relay stations. VK3OTN is the official station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club Australia Incorporated, with the monthly news and information bulletin for members and friends of the club.
Perth Luncheons. The popular and well-attended monthly luncheons for RAOTC members and friends in and around the Perth area are held on the second Tuesday of each month. The VK6 RAOTC group have a new venue, the Woodbridge Hotel, 50 East Street, East Guildford. Reports indicate the hospitality to be excellent. The Perth group meet at 11:30 a.m. for lunch at 12 midday. This is not a buffet meal, but excellent food in both pensioner and standard portions are available. We would like to place the orders at 12 midday, so please don't be late. This information is courtesy of Phil, VK6ZKO, whose contact details can be found on the club website.
It's customary to finish the broadcast with a humorous short story, and with the Paris Olympics underway, here's this month's offering. An Englishman, a Scotsman and an Irishman were without tickets for the opening ceremony of the Summer Olympics, but hoped to be able to talk their way in at the gate. Security was very tight, however, and each of their attempts was met with a stern refusal. While wandering around outside the stadium, the Englishman came across a construction site, which gave him an idea. Grabbing a length of scaffolding, he presented himself at the gate and said, "Johnson, the pole vault," and was admitted. The Scotsman, overhearing this, went at once to search the site. What he came up with was a sledgehammer. He presented himself at the gate and said, "McTavish, the hammer throw." He was also admitted. The Irishman combed the site for an hour and was nearly ready to give up when he spotted his ticket in. Seizing a roll of barbed wire, he presented himself at the gate and announced, "O'Sullivan, fencing." Somehow, I don't think he got in. That's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks where callbacks are taken. The next RAOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of next month on the same frequencies and at the same times as today, with the exception of January. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raatc.org.au. On the right-hand side of the main menu, click on VK3OTN Broadcast and you'll be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Down towards the bottom of the page is the current and previous 5 broadcasts for you to listen to. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QRM and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3ATN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from the RAATC broadcast team.